This is Wolf's Campfire, and you're about to listen to Three Scary Skinwalker Stories, Volume 3. You can also check me out on YouTube at youtube.com/wolfscampfire. Now with that said, whether you're sitting around a campfire, on the night shift, or even laying in bed, let my voice soothe your nightmares. Skinwalkers are very, very real. Written by The Next O.
Growing up in the central U.S., I've heard all of the myths and legends about skinwalkers. I never really gave them any merit up until last week. I've also heard that talking or thinking about them can draw them. But I need to tell someone. Anyone who will listen and not think I'm crazy. Let me start with some background. My name is Dakota. I'm 26 and have grown up in and around the Southern Rockies and the Superstition Mountains and all of the vast wilderness that is Colorado, Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico. All of my life I have been drawn to the outdoors. Hiking, climbing, biking, rafting, kayaking, you name it, and I've done it. I'm very experienced in all of these activities and have worked as a guide and survival instructor since the age of 19. I've experienced many strange and possible paranormal things during my time in the wild, but I'm rambling. Anyways, last Friday, I took some time off myself just to get back in tune with the solitude of nature. I packed all my gear, finished going through my checklist, and made sure to let some of the other guides know where I was headed and when I'd be back a few days later. I then loaded my gear into my four-wheeler, made sure Bear, my very large, very loyal, and very protective German Shepherd, was comfy in the passenger seat. He is my lookout, adventure partner, and my best friend. He never leaves my side, even to the point that all the small businesses around the long-forgotten mining town I call home welcome him happily. We set out shortly after 11 a.m. towards a canyon I'd recently discovered hidden away behind thick brush and an apparent rock slide. After about 5 hours of driving through the dusty and desolate landscape, the trail continues on between a narrow passage through the mountain cliffs. After getting the four-wheeler stashed away, I donned my pack and my sidearm, a large caliber Desert Eagle. There aren't many large animals out here, but I like guns and target shooting, so who cares if it's overkill? It's a last means of protection, and it will do the job. I surveyed the area. There was thick brush and dry foliage all around us, with a small foot trail I cleared from the four-wheeler at our rear, and a large rock pile in front of us, with sheer cliffs on either sides. I skirted around the rocks to the very narrow passage in behind on the left side. It was a tight squeeze, and I had to remove my pack and pull it in behind me. I had to side shuffle like this for about 20 feet, with cold, jagged rock against my chest and loose boulders against my back. The trail narrowed near the end, and I had to suck in my chest and wriggle my way out into a large opening in the rocks, where Bear waited happily for me, with his head cocked to the side, with a confused look on his face, almost as if wondering why I was struggling when he passed easily. When I finally freed myself from the narrow crevice and looked around, my jaw dropped. All around me, the cliff walls were covered in ancient cave paintings and carvings, some of which I recognized from some other Native American sites used as religious sites, but many of these symbols were new to me. The most notable was a large painting near where the trail continued on. It depicted a large figure whose head and antlers resembled that of a deer, but the body was long and narrow, the strangest of all, bipedal. It's at all times like these I wish I'd brought some piece of technology, such as a camera or my iPhone, but I usually leave them at home and only bring an emergency satellite phone. Intrigued, I left the opening and headed on down the trail. I was surprised by the steep downward slope that seemed to be heading down further and further into the earth, and was even more surprised when the trail ended at the mouth of a large cave. A cave I hadn't known about. This couldn't get any better. I sat down my pack and pulled out my flashlight. It was getting pretty dark, so I figured I would just check out the opening and then get settled for the night. I wandered in a few feet and abruptly stopped when the floor dropped down into a chasm. My flashlight barely penetrated the dark abyss below me. Disappointed that I'd need to return another day with my caving gear and possibly a partner, I headed back towards the mouth of the cave. And Bear, who had strangely stayed put and not followed me in, he must be tired, I thought, as I suddenly started to realize my own fatigue after 5 hours of driving and nearly 4 hours of hiking. I started a small fire with some light newspaper and logs I packed and which burn for a surprisingly long time, heated up some water for some dehydrated omelet, and gave Bear his bag of kibble. After a not quite so satisfying meal, anyone who has backpacked knows, I unrolled my sleeping bag and got comfortable with the fire by my side and the distant view of stars peeking between the distant clifftops that sheltered me from the rest of the world. With that peaceful thought, I dozed off to the sound of the crackling fire and Bear snoring beside me. I sleepily checked my watch when I was nudged awake. It was almost 3 a.m. I softly pushed Bear's head away from nudging me so I could go back to sleep. But that's when, in the dim firelight, I saw his teeth bared and head low beside me in a very protective position. He was staring towards the mouth of the cave with a deep guttural growl emanating from his throat. More alert now, I clumsily grabbed for my flashlight and unholstered my pistol, my finger ready to switch off the safety. I motioned to Bear to be quiet, which was a very handy skill that had taken a lot of time to learn. On command, he quieted, but still snarled, staring at the dark hole in the cliff. I illuminated the edge of the drop-off, my gun aimed with a beam, and we listened. For a few minutes, all I heard was silence besides my heartbeat. Then faintly, I heard it. I still can't describe it, but I will try my best. It sounded like the bleat of a goat and the yowl of a wildcat coming together to form words that seemed so broken and foreign. Quiet at first, it was accompanied by a clacking and scraping sound, getting closer and closer. I strained my eyes to see the edge and the beam of light. What I saw next, I'm sure, has been burned into my mind's eye, and I will never forget it. In the light, long rotten fingers with thick black claws curled around the lip and proceeded to pull something up and over into the cave. This thing pulled itself to standing. It was about 6 feet tall, with long, deer-like legs, too skinny to support it, that ended in small hooves and seemed to float above the ground. The body looked semi-human, but a skeleton draped with rotting, stinking flesh, with patches of mangled fur and ribs protruding from the chest. The smell was wretched, and I wanted to look away, to vomit, and to run. But I was paralyzed with fear, and I kept staring. At the long curled antlers, the warped and twisted body, long arms hanging loosely in front, claws scraping the ground. But mostly, the disturbing contorted mix of human and animal intertwined to make a face so haunting. I will remember vividly on my dying day, I'm sure. And when it locked onto my view with its empty, rotted sockets, it met my eyes and then I heard it. Quietly, but all around me, that horrid howl, mangled words.
Let me help you.
With that, I snapped out of my paralyzed state, switched the safety off, and pulled the trigger. Once, twice, three times, from only 3 feet away. In an instant, the horrible thing before me flickered and was 2 feet to the right. I fired again and again as this thing twitched and jerked towards me, a terrifying nightmare coming to consume my very being. I don't remember much of what happened next, bear barking, us sprinting, flashes of gunfire, the jerking and clacking, the putrid breath on my neck, and the voice, the evil voice echoing around me.
Let me help you.
I remember the peak of sunlight, the roar of the side by side, as me and Bear sped through the desert. We woke up in our shack uninjured, but forever scarred by our experience. It keeps me awake every night since, and I needed to tell somebody, to warn somebody. Please, if you see the carvings of the thing, or see an unknown cave, don't enter.
Skinwalker Story, written by Matt Craig.
This story takes place during one of my last few semesters in college during spring break. A group of friends and I decided that we should go on a road trip to Utah and camp under the stars. It was a beautiful idea, and one, if a normal experience, I would have done again. The drive came and went quick enough, but we needed special permission to get to the site that we had read about, and the only way was to talk with some elders of the Navajo tribe, and to receive a blessing to keep us safe out in the untamed wilderness. This process took the longest, and we were issued warnings that we should have never taken lightly. That was weird, like really weird, my friend Jackson said. Yeah, let's wait to talk about it until we set up camp. Distance, you know? I said, gesturing to the group of people just yards away from us. Aside from Jackson, our group included both of our girlfriends, Jasmine and Charlie. They were also shaken up by how odd the ceremony we had gone through really was. I put my hand on the back of Charlie's neck. She jumped, but relaxed when I leaned forward and gave her a kiss on the head. It was supposed to be a blessing. We should feel lucky. Let's go to the campsite and set up dinner, I said to the group. I was spooked too, but, as ever, there needs to be someone grounded. I smiled to everyone, exerting a type of pressure I didn't know I was capable of. Everyone's edge seemingly died down by the time we reached the portion of the desert we wanted. We set up two tents and got dinner going. The drinking started not soon after, and all of us found ourselves drunk and in awe of a setting sun. I raised my bottle up with my arm around Charlie and spoke aloud. To whatever we all did to deserve what we have. I met eyes with Charlie and planted a tipsy kiss on her lips. Everything up to this point felt like a dream. Of course, that came to an end when Jackson approached me after the last of the sun's light had gone away and we were surrounded by the desert sand and darkness. I still feel unsteady about the whole ritual thing they did, Jackson said, meeting my eyes with his. Jackson was so stressed, he could hardly stay still. So, I take it you don't want to do scary stories tonight? I joked, taking another drink out of the cooler. I just feel like we're being watched, Jackson said flatly. I sighed. Well, what do you want to do? Do you want all of us to cancel this trip, leave all of our stuff, and find a motel for the night? I asked. I trusted Jackson, and he saved my life more than I can count. So, I was willing to put my trust in him. If our campsite is still here in the morning, I won't mind staying. It would mean that I was wrong, and I'll buy you and Charlie dinner, as in I'm sorry for wasting your time kind of thing. Jackson's eyes pleaded just as hard as his words did. Let's do it, I said, placing my drink in the sand. I'm coming back for that. The girls weren't happy at all. They were sloppily drunk and upset that Jackson wanted to leave. But I took the lead and let my charisma take the wheel. I exerted the same carefree pressure and attacked the situation with grace, calming the girls down. The fear in Jackson, though, was deep. Something during the ritual had really spooked him. We made the hour drive back into town. Confused, the girls were agitated and they didn't understand why we had to leave. But they fell asleep and left Jackson and I to drive. It was the words they used, man. Jackson trailed. What do you mean? I just feel off. I feel like it wasn't a blessing. This concerned me. I did some research on Native American tribes in the area, and I didn't get far. Secrets are how these cultures survive, is something I remember reading. I let out a sigh as we pulled off the highway and into a motel with vacancies. Jackson and I bought separate rooms and carried our women respectively into them. Charlie and I slept fine, but Jasmine, on the other hand, was irritable the whole morning. Charlie talked to her on our drive back in whispers. Apparently, Jasmine spent the latter half of the night trying to ward off Jackson's continuous panic attack. Whatever feeling he had really gotten to him. The drive was tense, but when we arrived at the campsite, everything was fine. Everything we left there was virtually untouched. Our activities continued as they would. We sang, we goofed off, drank liquor, ate food, and screwed. It was the trip that we all had dreamed of until I stumbled across the beer I had left there. The beer was empty, and the top part of the bottle looked chewed at the top. I picked it up and disposed of it without the others noticing. I didn't want Jackson to freak out once more, but now my guard was up, and I felt the eerie feeling of being watched. It was intense, and the panic attacks he had experienced had a real reason. I hid the feeling for as long as I could, but with dusk approaching again, I elected to pull Jackson off to the side under the guise of bro talk. "It's something deep," I told the girls.
"What's up, man?"
Jackson asked.
"I believe every word you said, and I think we should leave tomorrow morning. I also think we need to convince the girls to sleep with all of us in one tent," I said, my eyes wearily meeting his.
"How? What happened?"
"You remember that bottle I put down when we left last night?"
"Yeah, oh shit, man."
Jackson gritted his teeth.
"You have any idea what it might be?"
I nodded and pointed at the ground and wrote the name Skinwalker into the sand before erasing the word. I said,
"We can't talk about it. They're attracted to it."
We both nodded. Neither of us knew how to handle the situation we found ourselves in. When we made it back to the campsite, neither of the girls could be found, and Jackson and I lost it, shouting for our women to come back. Needless to say, we were stressed. Jackson was two steps away from getting the revolver out of the car when the girls made their appearance.
"What's wrong, guys? Why are you guys stressing so hard?"
the two asked us separately. I took a deep breath to clear my head.
"Jackson and I were spooked, and you guys were nowhere to be found is all,"
I responded, and he nodded, making eye contact with me. There were things that I noticed immediately when the girls came back. Charlie was almost 2 full inches taller, and her legs looked almost disproportionate. Charlie's legs were skinnier, and she looked lankier, but neither of those things were something noticed at first. What I noticed first were her eyes, and how they were a bit animalistic. It felt like they saw me as prey, and they pierced right through me. Shivers rolled down my spine and affected me throughout my whole body. I pulled out my fear response with Charlie's hand on my shoulder. I felt my heart skip a beat, and I had to play it off like nothing was wrong. I needed to tell Jackson what I thought. I stood and gave Charlie a hug.
"You want a beer?"
I asked.
"I'd like that,"
she responded. I turned away and my eyes welled up with tears. The realization came that Charlie was most likely dead, and I coughed, almost unable to hold back both my rage and my despair.
"Jackson!"
I hollered and gestured him over to the cooler away from both of the girls. He looked at me, and almost instantly he recognized the pain that was hidden behind my hastily put on facade. He made his way over to me and placed his hand on my shoulder, just as that thing had a few moments before. A single tear rolled down my cheek as I moved his hand away.
"Don't!"
I gritted my teeth.
"We need to leave now, and without Charlie,"
I whispered. His eyes narrowed and stared me down before we spoke.
"I don't know what realization you came to, but I'll trust you as you trusted me."
I started making prep to leave. "We can leave the site built, but I'll grab the important things and toss them in the truck," he whispered. We both nodded, and from that point, I kept Charlie away from the truck. It was going well in the right context. Jackson got his girl drunk enough to sleep, and he put her in the truck and grabbed my gun, hiding it in his clothes. I did my job, too, keeping the creature away from the other two. I asked her if she wanted another drink, to which she responded positively to. Charlie never got that drink. I gave Jackson a signal to get the truck, and we both got in, stressfully, and started on our way out of the frickin' wasteland that would be our deathbed. I floored it. We were going over 100 in seconds. But from my rear view, I saw the body of my girlfriend take the mangled form of a coyote and begin to chase down the vehicle. "Shit, shit, shit, come on!" I wheezed. Jackson looked behind and saw what I had, and his anxiety spiked. He began to breathe heavily, and he pulled the gun out from his clothes, gripping it, making his knuckles white. What I assumed to be a skinwalker was keeping pace with our car, and our escape seemed to be impossible. It was gaining on us. This thing was performing an impossible feat, and it looked like we were going to make it to the end of the reservation. However, just over 2 football fields away from the sign that marked the edge of the protected land, the coyote form vanished. And when it did, something popped our rear tire, and the car began to lose control. I tried to stop it, but we slid sideways and the car flipped. The impact knocked me out. By the time I came to, I was in so much pain that crawling from the wreckage was enough for me to cry out in pain. Coughing, I tried to push myself to my feet once out. I looked around and my gun was nowhere to be found, and neither were what's left of the group. I saw a puddle of blood behind the vehicle that I refused to go investigate, and the horrible sounds I heard all around me made me feel as if I were in a nightmare. I heard a broken imitation of Charlie's voice and gross and distorted tearing noises. I can only assume what that was. I shuffled toward the end of my hell, refusing to look back. I was traumatized already. There was nothing I wanted to do or to see. I even left the gun behind. My ankle and arm were definitely broken. I used the pain to push myself forward. I stumbled, and the noises weren't stopping. They were getting closer. No footsteps, but the verbal distorted screams and coos. I would have shot myself had I had brought the gun with me, but I made it off of the protected land and crumbled to the ground. In my daze, I looked back behind me and saw something I'll never forget. What I saw was a slick gray thing peel my dead girlfriend's skin off its body and run off into the distance, under the moonlight, mocking me, laughing and screaming and using my... This is the last I'll speak of this, and I'll never go anywhere near native land again.
You All Need to Chill About Skinwalkers, written by Alicia Moons.
You all need to chill about skinwalkers. I mean, the second you see someone talk about their experience in a forest, you all run around screaming skinwalker, like it's the end of the whole world, and they're definitely going to die. And you do that regardless of where they are geographically, what time of year it is, or even the types of events they're expecting. Honestly, it's enough to make me want to bang my head against the wall sometimes. First of all, they aren't even skinwalkers. Skinwalkers probably don't even exist anymore, since the Navajo culture has dwindled significantly, and to my knowledge, there have been no Navajo shamans who have rejected their faith in recent years. It's possible there's one or two still around, but they're going to be low in number, and in northeast Arizona and parts of New Mexico. They're desert dwellers and aren't even found in forests. The creatures that you're calling skinwalkers have never been given a proper name, but I've called them voice talkers since I was first encountered with them when I was 12. Back then, I lived in my parents in the forest of Northern California, way off the beaten track. I mean, it was like an hour drive to the nearest town. It was pretty isolated. Our family had lived there for almost 40 years. So, the creatures in the forest more or less left us alone, until I got old enough to wander into the woods by myself. They were always curious about me and once I had one knocking on my window in the early hours in the morning, but I don't count those as encounters because I was never in any real danger. The first time one properly got to me, I was 12 years old and out in the forest alone for the first time. It was my first year going to school instead of being homeschooled by my mother and I. Like most 12-year-olds, I hated school. So, I went into the forest to blow off some steam. It was getting dark already and was approaching sunset, which is important because voice talkers, like most of the creatures in the forest, are nocturnal. I was walking along one of the trails, not paying attention to where I was going, when I heard someone call my name. They sounded just like my mother. So, I called back, "Mom?" And of course, it called me again. Let me just say that this voice talker was smart. In fact, it was the smartest voice talker that I've ever come across. Most of the time, they aren't much more intelligent than your average dog, which is why they usually imitate animals. That's just as effective as using a human voice. You would not believe the number of campers who will follow the sound of a dog barking in the forest for miles. Anyways, it was calling me from the direction of my house. So, of course, I turn around and start heading back towards the house and towards the voice talker. It's still calling me, and I'm yelling back every couple of minutes. And then it says, "Alicia, I can hear you. Come over here." It sounded like my mother was terrified. I never saw my mother afraid before or after this incident, but I knew that she was then. The voice talker does fear and anxiety really well, by the way. Before I moved away from that house, I could pick it out of a crowd because it always sounds hurt. So, I start panicking a little, not knowing why she was upset. I could tell that my mom was off the path, so I stepped off of it and kept following the sound of her voice, all the while telling her I was coming and to just wait for me. I get to where her voice is coming from, and it's coming from right behind this big tree. I walked around it, and the voice talker was there. One of the things you guys always get right is that the voice talkers don't want to be seen. They prefer to stay hidden until the very last second, and there is a good damn reason for that. They are ugly and awkward, and won't pass for anything besides a voice talker when you lay eyes on them. This one was standing upright, and its back against the tree, with a huge circular mouth hanging open, humped back, and with its shoulders at an awkward angle. One of its legs had been broken at some point, and it was standing awkwardly. It was scary as hell to hear my mother's voice echoing out of that gaping circular hole it called the mouth. "There you are, Alicia," it said. I tried to run away, obviously, but it grabbed me. It wasn't much larger than I was, and it was skeletal and weak-looking. But being grabbed by it felt like I was being held by an adult 3 times my size. It threw me to the ground and climbed on top of me. That mouth expanded vertically, and then the rest of its body did too. Like it had a zipper from the top of its head all the way down to its belly button. Flesh peeled backwards and opened up, exposing the inside of its body. The bones went too, the ribs and skull flexing like they were made of rubber. It was hollow inside, except for these pale sacks of flesh that hung, pulsating from the inside of its ribcage, and what looked like tonsils in its throat. I was trying to scream, but by then, the weight of its body had pressed all the air out of my lungs. My heart was pounding, so hard that it felt like it would burst out of my chest, and I couldn't move my arms or legs. Those pale organs inside of its ribcage started to grow and reach towards my face, and my adrenaline spiked so hard I felt my consciousness try to leave my body. It gave me a needed boost of clarity and awareness of my body. I managed to get my legs up against the voice talker and started kicking the inside of its torso, contorting my body to keep my face as far away from its organs as possible. After a couple of seconds of that, it shifted to hold down my leg, and I got my arm loose. To this day, I don't know why I thought it was a good idea, but I reached out and punched it in the tonsil. It screamed so loud, and in so many different voices all at once, that my senses almost couldn't handle it. It was like being blasted full volume with every action movie fight scene all at once. My ears started ringing, and I actually thought I had died for a moment. Then, I realized I was still alive, and I punched again, hitting the other voice act this time. The same thing happened again, and the voice talker was finally stunned enough to loosen its hold on me a little bit. I kicked it off of me and got to my feet. I seized the nearest large stick and hit the thing in the head twice. Then, its zipper started to close up again. Instead of leaving well enough alone, I grabbed whatever I could from the ground and stuffed it inside. Rocks, leaves, beetles, flowers, pine needles. Its wall went into the voice talker. I wasn't able to get much in there, but what I did manage was enough to make it retch and spill open again, its body literally turning inside out. While it was lying there, writhing and flapping like a demonic manta ray, I stood up, still holding the stick I had used to beat it. Which is when I noticed there were three more watching me from the tree line. At this point, it was almost fully dark, but I could make them out because my entire body was aware of their shape now. Like how you instantly recognize a snake when you see one. I was dead terrified, but I was angry too at that point, and I knew they wouldn't just let me leave. So, I screamed at it loudly as I could. What the hell do you want? I'll beat you all too! But none of them approached me, and after a few seconds, I backed away from all four of them. When none followed, I took my new stick and ran all the way back to the house. I was bleeding from the ears and temporarily deaf for about 10 minutes afterwards, and sometimes I still hear the ringing in my ears because of it. The voice talkers never tried to lure me away ever again. I would tell you that I don't know why they all didn't pile onto me that night and kill me, but that would be a lie. I won't tell you why right now. If people ask, I might explain later, but for now, let's just say there's a whole lot more than voice talkers in the forest, and they're like coyotes or foxes in terms of the food chain, mostly feeding off scraps and remains of other creatures left behind. I learned later that their diet mostly consists of leaves and grass, that they only go after humans and other large animals during the breeding season, which begins in late summer and extends to mid-fall. The other thing that I learned later is why punching that voice talker in the tonsil, they collect sounds in the sacs of their throat. I don't know how, but they literally capture voices and release them back out. The voice talker that attacked me must have been hanging around the house for months or years, catching fragments of my mother's voice in order to catch me off guard. When I punched those sacs, I released all the sounds that the voice talker had stored up. It was the equivalent of punching someone's breath out of them. But, like I had actually managed to collapse its lungs. Now, obviously, I don't recommend dealing with voice talkers this way, since you'll probably just be eaten by others, even if you incapacitate one of them in one of the ways. Instead, if you think you're being attacked by voice talkers, set up speakers facing outwards from your house or campsite and play something with a whole bunch of voices in it. Sitcoms and comedy shows with ensemble casts are best, especially if they have a laugh track. The voice talker will be so preoccupied with collecting new voices and sounds that it will probably stop trying to attack you for the night, and then, instead of hearing the voices of your friends or animals calling you from the woods, you get to hear snippets of dialogue from the office. For a week or so. It's good fun, and a lot less difficult to explain away. Plus, you'll give the other creatures in the woods a laugh with it, which is always a good first impression. If voice talkers are your biggest problem, you've gotten off easy. I should mention that some of the other creatures that stories here have lumped in under the title Skinwalker are different from the voice talkers, and are a whole lot more difficult to deal with, but I don't want to make this any longer than it already is, and I'm not convinced you'll take my advice even if I give it.